Okay, as you guys are opening up to Song of Songs, chapter 1, one of the things that I have noticed is that finding good, like, relationship advice is like finding truth on the internet. Both are equally as difficult. And what you do, in order to get good relationship advice, you kind of have to wade through, like you do when you're looking, like, you, for example, you've got a paper that's due and you've got a source, but you got a source on the internet, and there's all these rules about how you do that, and people look at you like skeptically if you're like got a research paper, you're like, guess what BuzzFeed says. And then your teacher looks at you a little weird, like, I don't think you should go that route. And so finding truth online is so similar to finding good relationship advice. You have to wade through all of the garbage and the opinions that are stated as fact. Like, no, you definitely need to do this. If you do this, he is on the hook. He'll be ready. Just do this. And people state these things as fact, and they're certain of it. You also have to, for whatever reason, wade through a lot of angry people, like both relationship advice and online. You got to wade through people that are heartbroken. Maybe they just got out of a relationship. And so, man, should I date? No, never. They are all the worst. Don't do it. If you do, your soul will die. Just don't. And so we have to, like, the two are extremely similar at times. And yet we still have all of these questions. And yet when it comes to attraction, and yet when it comes to romantic relationships, we still come with a bag full of questions. Like, hey, how is it that one person finds another? Is it fate that brings them together? Is it just sheer dumb luck? Is it timing? Is it God? Is that what God does? Is he interested in that? Does God grab two very specific people in the universe and go, you are going to marry you, and here we go, and slowly bring those people together over time? And what happens if one of those people, as they're being brought together, gets hit by a bus? Is your one now gone for life? Like, is your one option now for gone forever? That took a turn, right? Yeah. So sorry. But that's the question. Like, okay, so if they're not the one, then how do I know who is the one? And if I'm attracted to somebody, how do I know whether or not I should date them? How do I know whether or not they are dateable? How do I know whether or not I am dateable? How do I know even that the basis of my attraction is good? Do I just jump into that, or what is the purpose of that? Does that go anywhere? And so we come with all of these questions when it comes to our relationships. And there's a lot of opinion out there. And yet, and I think this is true of all of us in every part of our life, we really hunger for truth. When something that is true and deeply true falls on us, it falls fresh and new, and it's life-giving. It may be convicting, but it's also life-giving. And so what we want to do this morning is step into what is actually true when it comes to relationships, when it comes to the things that are supposed to happen between two people. And we've been going through this series called The Song of Songs. And if you are unfamiliar with this book or have not been in this series, and what we're about to talk about is a total surprise to you, and you're like, this is church? Yes, this is church. It is in the Bible. But what we're going through is this book that was the song above every other song, written by Solomon, who was a king of Israel and called the wisest man who ever lived. And out of the 1,000 songs that at least we know that he wrote, this one is the one above every other. It is unlike any other. And within all of human literature, it exists on its own, and it exists uniquely within the Bible as well. If you're familiar with it, the Song of Songs is a very unique book, as it follows in poetic form a man and a woman as they are moving in through different stages of their relationship, whether it be the first time they meet, which is where we're going to go today, or whether it be their wedding night, which is where we'll be in a few weeks. But it follows these different stages. Sometimes they're looking back, sometimes they're looking forward. But it was a book that was only read in Jewish culture if you were an adult, because it is a very erotic book. It uses symbolism and illustration to bring out things about the human heart and body, but it does so unashamed. Though it is an erotic book, it does so in an unashamed manner. And so equally for us, as we venture into things that oftentimes make people feel uncomfortable, that's why I've got new chairs, make it a little bit easier as we go through the series, is that that we also want to be unashamed and remove some of the stigma around some of the conversation and the questions that we have. And one of the things that we have throughout this series is that we do hope and desire that you text in questions. Already, we've got really good questions that have been texted in, and I'm very thankful for their honesty, because you can sense the honesty around them. Sometimes people like to be ridiculous and ask ridiculous questions, but in general, honest questions receive an honest answer. And so it's very simple, and this will be on every slide, is that you text that code at the top, 375-839, and then a space, and then your question to that number, 22333. If you do it right, you'll get your question and response. It's totally anonymous, no numbers, no names show up. You will not get weird follow-up texts from us of like, oh gosh, you got that going on, okay. That we do not do that. And then what we're going to do is throughout the series is answer those questions, but especially in the last week of the series, as we pull up a panel of people in different stages of their relationships, walk through those questions. So my hope is that you ask them honestly, and especially as we now move into some of more of the probably immediately applicable parts of their story to ours, I think these questions will begin to come out. Now, the big idea for our entire series is this, is one that Brian mentioned earlier, is that God invites all of us, every single person in this room, to a life of freedom and fulfillment. And this is every part of our life, that every facet of our life that we have, that he invites us into this. That he says, this is what I desire for you. This comes out of things of Jesus saying things like, if the Son sets you free, you are free indeed. You are meant to have freedom in Christ. That he says, the thief only comes to steal, kill, and destroy. I have come that they may have life and have it to its fullest extent, be filled up. I mean, this is what Jesus says literally is my purpose for entering into the world as God in the flesh. That this is the end result of that. This comes from, as we read in the very first week in our series, is the man and the woman have been in the relationship, and now they move to their wedding night, and we'll eventually get back to this verse where they are, it's the scene where they are about to have sex, and into this scene, God speaks into it and speaks freedom and fulfillment and says, have it all. He says, actually be drunk on your love. Have such a fill of it, like you would wine, be drunk on your love for one another. There's total freedom and fulfillment in that. And this is God's heart and desire. And that is especially true and meant to be true in whom we are attracted to, in whom we attract, and in whom we enter into a romantic relationship with. Because the word attraction is an important one to talk about, because it is inevitable that pretty much every relationship that starts at attraction, or at least I hope so, that it didn't start as like a bet or a dare, that it started at attraction, that there is something about them, oftentimes physical, not bad, that's part of it, that attracts us to that other person. But the questions of why would I enter into a relationship with that person, or when do I enter into a relationship with that person, or how do I enter into a relationship with that person, those are deeply important questions, ones that are meant to lead to freedom and fulfillment. Because how we answer those questions really kind of moves us in one of a couple directions. I mean, if you think of just even the question, why I'm dating this person, that's a big question, because that reveals heart motivation and reveals the foundation that you have set up for why you're in a romantic relationship. It's going to set the path for wherever your relationship goes, whether good or bad. You can look back and go, you know what, that started at the heart reason of why we entered into this whole thing at the very beginning. And so if God's desire is for freedom and fulfillment, well, the way that happens for us is when we hear, implement, and live out the truth that he offers and invites us into. And so that's what we want to do this morning, is move from theory and move from abstract ideas to let's move to what we are going to call the laws of attraction. And where this comes out of is the very first time that the man and the woman meet. So if you have the book of Song of Songs open, go to chapter 1. And what we're going to do is we're going to kind of move through this quick. There's a lot of things in here. And so I'm going to go through them quickly. There's going to be a huge chunk of info today. So if you are a note taker, write fast, get moving. Here we go. And I'm going to break down these verses as we move. The Song of Songs, this is verse 1. Song of Songs, chapter 1, verse 1. The Song of Songs, which is Solomon's. she speaks first. Let him kiss me with the kisses of his mouth, for your love is better than wine. Your anointing oils are fragrant, and your name is oil poured out. Therefore, my version says virgins, just means women love you. Draw me after you. Let us run. The king has brought me into his chambers. So here's what's going on. Is that before she ever knows him, she knows about him. This is kind of how it works in life, right? Oftentimes, before we ever know somebody, we know about them. And she says, your name, this guy, your name is like oil, is refined oil that is poured out. And so before she ever meets this guy, his aroma, his name, right? We do this with people, is that their name evokes a memory. Their name evokes a thought. There's some names where if I said that name, it reveals how people would feel. So you've got a name of someone you hear and you're like, oh, that's my best friend. And then we say another name and you're like, do not like that person because of what their name invokes. Same with him. And notice it says, no wonder, some versions say women, some versions say the maiden, no wonder that other women actually like to be around you. Now, this doesn't mean romantically attracted. It may, but it doesn't mean that they all have the hots for you. What it means is that they like to be around this dude. Because if you go back to where we're talking about the list, remember I said burn the list, and said, if you're going to make a list of what you're looking for in another person, just put one thing. That is a person that others enjoy being around, not just because of company, but because they build them up, because they treat them as a person made in the image of God and give them worth and value, and he's doing that. And so the first law that comes out, what she points out in this, is that our character is our cologne or perfume. It's going to go before you. It is meant to be part of what attracts. So she says, it went before you. Before I ever met you, I knew who you were. And so one of the questions that it causes us to ask is if we are attracted to someone and if we are interested in someone, and let me do a quick pause because for some of us, you just ain't there. In your life, you are like, John, I don't have a dating conversation because I ain't interested in dating. I love the, years ago, I remember talking with a high school guy and I just was asking them, it was like in a small group. So like, hey, are you guys dating or interested in it at all? And one dude's like, nope. Why not? I got no money. I was like, oh, you're brilliant. I love you. Like, so simple and clear of like, man, I just ain't even there. I'm so poor. Like, I just started working at Subway. Girlfriend, not an option. I was like, great. Like, we know how to operate with that guy. So some of us, for various reasons, are not going to be in that place in our life. But others of us are. We are dating or are really hoping to be, or because of where we're at in age, probably will be soon, perhaps. And so for us, one of the principles that we have to allow to sink deep in our hearts is that truth was not meant to be spoken simply in the moment that we needed it. It was meant to be spoken before we ever did. And so if you're not in that place and your natural tendency is go like, dude, I'm not interested. I'm not looking for a fiance. I'm like 14 or 15, not my thing. Here's the thing. You are already in process of becoming, and we'll arrive at this point at the end, of who you're going to be when you're married, engaged, dating, whatever. You're already there, and you don't even know it. I didn't know it. And so this conversation must be had before you arrive at that point, which begs the question, if I am interested in somebody, what's their aroma? What's their name? What's their name? Better question, and the harder one, what's mine? What does my name invoke for other people? That's for some of us, a bit of a gut punch question. And it's where the brothers, as we talked about last week, come in, people that will be honest with you. So the first law is that our character is our cologne or perfume. And then go a little bit further. Notice in verse 4, she says, draw me after you. And then I love this three little word phrase. She said, let us run. The king has brought me into his chambers. That does not mean to sleep with her. That just means his house. Let us run. One of the first things you notice in this is freedom. We're going to keep using that word a lot. There's freedom. She says, let's go, let's run. What are you waiting for? There's nothing holding us back from entering into a romantic relationship. And what often gets us into trouble, what creates incredible frustration and tension in our life, is that we enter into a romantic relationship that for various reasons can go nowhere. And we know it. And we know it. And we lie to ourselves and we lie to them. And we go, well, we'll just do it anyway. I mean, usually the equation of whether or not I'm going to date somebody is very simple. This is generally, there's exceptions, how we do it. I like you, you like me, yeah, we should probably date. Like, it's like that simple. And then you got your friends that join in and they say things like, oh, you guys would be so cute together. And they throw that in. Sorry, ladies, as a dude, I never said that. I never was like, yo, Adam, you will be so cute with her, man. You, like, never had that conversation? That's just not how I talk? But then you got friends throwing their, like, haphazard advice into it because they're trying to live vicariously through your, like, budding romance, because that's what we do as people. And so you get all of this in, and no one in the entire world is asking the question, including ourselves, should I even be dating this person? Should I even be entering into a relationship with them? Because one of the laws that exists in attraction is that romance was meant to start when we have the freedom to run. You should be able to start the romantic relationship and go. I don't mean physically, I mean in life. Just go. That there should be nothing holding you back. I am not a big proponent of people doing these like 8-year dating and engagement things. I'm like, dude, 8 years? Come on, you either know or you don't. Like, let's go, move on or get with it. Come on now. And so what you have her is inviting, go like, let's run. Nothing is holding them back. Not money, not life, not age, not parents' rules, nothing. And where we get into trouble is that we desire to run when all the external and internals point to not yet. And so say, for example, parents say, hey, you cannot date until whatever. Dude, there's your answer. Whether you like it or not, there's your answer. You can't run. You do not have the freedom to run. It has not been granted or gifted to you yet. Because the Bible does not say this. I will never say that dating in high school is wrong, because it is not inherently wrong and or sinful. And there's lots of people that do it and do it well and right and all that. Just understand what you are opting into, that you're opting into a relationship that is already going to be tough, because here's the truth. 99% of high school relationships, they can't go anywhere. Like, are you really going to, at 16, go, dude, I'm going to marry you? Do you really think that you're ready for that? And on the flip side of that, if you're going, well, I'm not interested in any of that, I'm just looking to play, whoa, wait a second here. How do you view other people? And we'll go into this next week, but how do you view other human beings that they are your part-time plaything until you're done? Because again, deep down, you know it can't go anywhere. And we lie to ourselves and we fool ourselves. It is why the primary reason that high school relationships end is not because people are dysfunctional or because they did bad things or anything like that. The primary reason is the hard truth is because you're in high school, because it's hard to do that. It's hard to run, and it's nothing wrong with that because your heart and your body desire to. You and I were designed to bond. Again, we'll go there next week. And so we enter in a romantic relationship with someone and we want to bond with them. And I'll tell you right now, nothing is working wrong in that moment. In fact, everything's working right. We want to bond. We want to be physical. But we've got this incredible tension where I desire this, but everything else is not allowing me to run. That is why relationships were meant to start when and only when you have the freedom to run forward, full steam ahead. Verse 5, now the others step in. This is their friends. Depending on the version, it says others or friends or whatever. They step in and say, we will exalt you and rejoice in you. We will extol your love more than their wine. And they broadcast to everybody, rightly, rightly do they love. So she's interested in him. She's thrown out the invitation. We'll get to that. Hey, I am interested. Come on, let's go. We can run. Come get me. Pursue me. And then the others step in and they go, oh yeah. If you end up with him, well done. And well done for him too. You ought to run. And one of the principles that comes out of this is that our relationship is meant to be praised by the godly. That it's meant to be. That our relationship, for those that we trust and value and have a relationship with the Lord that speak into that, we are meant to have that external praise. And if we do not, then that should be a major concern and or red flag. And we all know the people that you ask the question, you're like, why in the world did they date that? Like, why are they with them? Like, you can see the tornado train wreck of dysfunction coming like a mile away, and you're looking at this going, what are they doing? Don't ever be that person that others are looking like, what choice are you making right now? It is for us, and again, this is the role of the older brothers in our life to go, hey, this is not or is a good idea. And if there is not praise, if there is not encouragement from those, again, older and our older brothers that we value and love, or parents, or whoever that is, if they're looking at you going, look, do not do this. This is not going to be good. Or on the flip side, if they're smart, they're going to look at you go, and maybe they go, hey, it's not that you shouldn't date her, for example. Maybe she shouldn't date you. I mean, I love you, brother, but you ain't ready. Like, you're just going to jack her up. Like, this is not going to be good. Again, you got no money. You got no car. Nobody wants to go on a date on the back of a bicycle with your mom chasing you because you have a curfew. Like, that is uncomfortable. Stay away. And so their relationship is praised. And for us, it is very easy to fall into the trap and the idea that we're like, oh, other people just don't know them like I do. Or they're judging them. Or when they're with me, they're different. And what we're doing is creating a false equation in our head. And we think that they're the ones that are getting fooled, and it's not. Every time, it is us who are getting fooled if we believe that. We're the ones being deceived and lied to. That is why this exists, that it is meant to be praised by the godly. On the flip side of that, how fulfilling for us if the people that we love and value look at our relationship, whoever we decide to enter in a romantic relationship with and when, and go, rightly do you love? How fulfilling that is a badge of honor for us rather than something we have to hide and be disgraceful about. One of the things I want you to notice through verses 2-4 is their interaction. She speaks, but notice the order. She says, let him kiss me. So it's an invitation. For your love is better than wine. Your name is oil poured out. She says, then draw me after you. Let us run. And then it says, after that invitation, says the king has brought me into his chambers. And so there's a very specific interaction that these two are having. She invites, he pursues. He pursues, she invites. And of all the laws this morning, I think this one is going to be potentially the most difficult to understand or difficult pill to swallow. Law number 4 is the man who is meant to pursue and the woman to invite. And it's when we mix that up or we reverse that or we abuse it. For example, you have a man who refuses to pursue. He refuses. Says, if you want me, girl, you got to come get me. Or you have a man who pursues when not invited, right? We have the fullest extent of that when you think of things like abuse and assault. That is the worst example of a man who pursues without invitation. The role that is given to each is meant to reflect the image of God. And I'll tell you this, ladies, it is not your job to get him to have the light bulb go on. It's not your job to fix him or to get him to understand. Guys are very simple. If we would like to pursue something, we will. If we do not want to pursue it, we will not. It is very simple. And I'll tell you, if from a guy, if you are a girl and you find yourself, maybe not now, just in your life, and you're the one chasing the guy, say you get him and you married and all that stuff, you will find yourself having to chase him your whole life. And you know what the end result of that will be? You will not respect him. You will have attraction, but you will have no respect for him because he never pursued. On the flip side of that, men that do not respect women do not notice or accept the invitation. They don't hear that. They pursue to get whatever they want, no matter what. And the flip side of that is men, guys, if you are unwilling to pursue, if your life is going to be about demanding that somehow some girl down the road do something to get your attention, you know who you will not respect in the end is yourself. You will not respect yourself. Now, because within this, men and women equally reflect the heart and image of God. We know in Genesis, when God says, let us make man in our image, it then says male and female, he made them. Clearly, and I think if anything, yesterday is a very good example. We as a culture still do not know how to understand, define, and value gender in our country. We do not. We find ourselves deeply confused and angry. I think that was shown yesterday. And one of the beautiful things about scripture is from the very beginning, what God does is he says, look, I have the answer that both men and women are made in my image equally and reflect me equally but uniquely. And we know that later in Ephesians, what Paul talks about is how a man and a woman in a marriage relationship reflect how Jesus loves his church, that the way that a man pursues and loves his wife is the way that God pursues and sacrifices and comes after his people, and that a way that a woman loves and sacrifices for her husband is the way that we are meant to respond to Jesus. And so the two of them, and this word is incredibly important, equally reflect the image of God. And so when we live that out, when this law is lived out in our life, not only are we simply doing something that causes respect for ourselves and the other person, we are actually living out the very purpose for which God has designed us. And not only is it amazing to find that person to be with, it is deeply fulfilling that once you do, you are living out how God has designed you to live. That is the difference between fulfillment and just simply having romance. It was meant to be this way. And notice within this, and I think it's super important to point out, she's not some passive, like, weak woman here. She's throwing out the invitation. Hey, let him kiss me with the kisses in his mouth. What are you waiting for, brother? Come on. Like, she is not sitting there, like, playing hard to get in this ridiculous I think it's just a cruel version, this over caricature of this weak woman. She is, and you will find this out, she is not weak. But what she does in her security is she goes, okay, you're designed to pursue me, and so let's go. If you're going to pursue, awesome, pursue me. Then you go a little further. Now she begins to talk about herself. The others have praised her, and then she says this, verses 5-7. I'm very dark, but I'm lovely. O daughters of Jerusalem, like the tents of Gedar, like the curtains of Solomon, don't gaze on me. So they're now, she's heard about them, that they're now about to be face to face, and naturally she's concerned about how she looks. The sun has looked upon me. My mother's sons were angry with me. They made me a keeper of the vineyards, but my own vineyard, remember that word from last week, means her body, I have not kept. And then, despite her insecurity, what she says is she says, tell me whom my soul loves, where you pasture your flock, where you make it lie down at noon. For why should I be like the one who veils herself beside the flocks of your companions? So here's what's going on here. Now, in their culture, to be tan was not a good thing. It meant you worked outside. In their culture, they liked honky white people. They would have loved Seattle. Now, in ours, if you are naturally born with pigment, congratulations, you don't have to pay hundreds of dollars of what white people go all over the place to get in little awkward tanning booths with blue light and then burn themselves and then they'll just look red instead. So you, the Lord hath blessed you naturally with what people are paying money for. So congratulations. But in their culture, it was the reverse. And so she's walking into this, and he is so, this form of royalty, either the king or he is around women that look and just by their dress and by their everything, just everything about them screams what she is not. And she's insecure in that. How true of all of us, both male and female, that we enter into every relationship we have the opportunity to either use that to feed our insecurities or not. That's our options. And what's in front of us is we can either use that person to fill our insecure needs, or we can serve them. And oftentimes people enter into relationships where it's two people using one another. And so she says what she was going to do, despite her insecurity, she says, I'm not going to be like the veiled woman. Now, in their culture, that was a prostitute. A prostitute would put, in our culture, it's a bride, and theirs, it would put the veil over their face, and you could see a little bit, but it was meant to entice men of like, oh, I wonder what's behind the veil. And so the women would go to where the men were. That's where the business was. And so she says, despite my insecurities, I will not use what they're using to get you. And here is the law. The bait we use determines the catch we get. It is both true in fishing and in people. See, what you use is going to define how your relationship starts. And it doesn't merely have to be physical. But if you do use your physical body exclusively as bait, why would you ever be surprised if you're going to get a person that's all they're interested in? Because that's what you put out there. That was the foundation of your relationship. But keep in mind why we're doing it. It's because for every single one of us, we long for, we long to be wanted. We long to be seen as handsome or beautiful. I hope this doesn't strike you as odd, but every human being desires to be seen in some way as sexy. Like that's actually a good thing. We want that. But we want it so deeply, and do not find that in our secure identity of who God makes us and gifts us, that we will actually go to another person and we will try and get that out of them, whether it be physical or emotional or whatever. And here we have what is often the very real reason that people enter into romantic relationship is, if we're honest, the reason that we entered into it, if we can't figure out a reason, is we entered into it because we're trying to get that other person to fill us up and fulfill us. And that will eventually fail. And we'll eventually wear them out and wear ourselves out, whether it be physical or not. I mean, it can be something as simple as that you act like they're Jesus. Like, hey, come to me and I'll fix you. I'll make you whole. I'm not like your dad. I'm like me. I'll be better. And the reality is that the same level of disappointment is going to happen. That person doesn't need you to be their Jesus. They need Jesus to be their Jesus. You make a terrible Jesus for them. Don't ever get sucked into that. And so the law of attraction here is that whatever we use to put out to get that person is the type of person that we'll get. I remember having a conversation with a high school guy a few years ago, and he was sleeping with his girlfriend. I'll remove his name, but he was sleeping with his girlfriend, and we asked him, like, hey, man, you ever going to marry her? Like, you even interested in that all? He's like, no, I'm not going to marry her. The girl that I'm going to marry is going to be a virgin when I marry her. Now, removing the incredible hypocrisy of that, right, it revealed where his heart was. And one of the things I want you to notice is that the king brings her, that's the woman in the story, to his house. The veiled women remain outside with the other guys. See, a guy will, ladies, if you want, you can get a guy. 15 minutes, you're good. Like, it's about as much time as it'll take you. But always the question is what kind. And know that the veiled woman will always have a man, but that man will not bring her home to meet mom and the family and stuff. She'll always have a man, but not the kind of man she's longing for, because that kind of man isn't seeking after the veiled woman, seeking a different kind. And so the law of attraction here is that the bait we use determines the catch that we get. Now, verse 8, he begins to speak. So first time, she has called him a shepherd. And then she says this, "If you do not know, O most beautiful among women, follow in the tracks of the flock and pasture your young goats beside the shepherd's tents." So two times now, both he and her have called each other a shepherd. Now, for us, that's hard to understand, but in their culture, it wasn't exactly a term of endearment, but in the Bible it is. Jesus was called a shepherd. Pastors are called to be shepherds. Leaders are called to be shepherds. And notice that, again, going back to that equality thing, both she and he have the characteristics of a shepherd. She notices it in him. He notices it in her, and that it's a characteristic of gentleness and strength and character, that a shepherd would stand their ground regardless of what was coming to protect the sheep. And so they both have high quality of character. And he looks at her she's beautiful. Despite the insecurity that she feels, he sees her as immensely beautiful. But that's not the only thing he clues in on. Now for her, he's got status. He is wealthy, lives in the palace, has all of this money, has beautiful friends. But she could have been only attracted to that, but sees through that. And the law of attraction here is that we have to learn to be attracted to what God values, because our wanter is busted. You and I, every single person in this room, our desire-o-meter, our wanter is broken. There's this anecdotal story about these thieves that break into a department store at the beginning of the century. They break in and they don't take anything, but instead what they do is they take every item in the store and they reverse all of the price tags on it. So watches that are worth $2,000, they switch to be worth 39 cents, like little trinkets. And they go through the entire store and do this. And so everybody walks in the next day, and things that are meant to be $2,000 are worth nothing. And things that are worth nothing now cost hundreds to thousands of dollars. And yet, this is exactly what we do when it comes to how people are made up and what we are attracted to and what our culture values. We take the things that are only worth 39 cents and we make them worth thousands, and we devalue the things that are priceless and discard them like they don't matter. And so our wanter is busted, and we have to learn to be in reverse. Now, what this does not mean, it does not mean that physical attraction is not part of it. They are clearly very physically attracted to each other. And that is a good thing. I would never give the advice to someone of like, "Hey, I think I should marry them." "Well, are you attracted to them?" "No, they're the ugliest thing I've ever seen." And you're like, okay, time out. Like, I would be really concerned about where this relationship's going then. That's not healthy and good. And yet, to sacrifice what values most just simply because the person is hot is foolish, is incredibly stupid. We have to learn to value what God values. And one of the questions that this creates for us is the question of, hey, if I am a Christian, can I even date someone that is not? This is one of the biggest questions that comes out. Now, if you're not a believer, know that this does not apply to you. My concern for you is that you would meet, know, and love Jesus. That's my number one concern. And that through this series, that you would see God's incredible and fulfilling love for us, that that would be your starting place. But if you are, one of the questions that you have to ask yourself is my Christianity something that I am or something I have to overcome? It's a very big difference because it reveals two things. It reveals, one, actually what we think about Jesus, and two, it reveals what we think about other people. Because if your Christianity is in the way of the person you want to be with, and it's something to get through, then it reveals how you think about your Christianity. That's one of proximity. It's one of, I'm around Christians and I go to church and I do these things, but it's not actually who I am. Because if you are willing to ignore what becomes one of the clearest commands in the Bible of do not be unequally yoked or linked, if you're willing to go, that doesn't matter, I'm going to throw that out, then I think you already have your answer of who Jesus is to you. And this question reveals where I stand with him. Jesus is my crutch. Jesus is my frustration. Jesus is in my way, not who I am. And that should be sobering and a little bit scary. On the flip side of that, I would ask this question: how do you view that other person? And if you're the person that is being dated by the person who says they are a Christian but knows you're not and then just doesn't care about that, here's my question. So they've admitted to you that they changed their mind based upon what works best for them. And that worked out great for you when you got what you wanted. But here's the flip side of that. What's going to happen when that doesn't work out well for you? They've already admitted to the fact that they will change their mind based upon what they want. What happens when what they want isn't you anymore? You are dating somebody whose character is even less than that of a believer, though they say they are one. And if you are that believer who's saying like, yeah, it's not a big deal, I don't really care about it, then how do you value this other person? And if you know deep down this relationship can't go anywhere because in the end you're like, I know I'm gonna have to end up with someone that believes what I do and all this stuff. So again, go back to what that person is to you. Are they your plaything for a period of time? And how little do you value another human being to enter into a romantic relationship with them knowing that's not ever gonna go anywhere and yet you say you love Jesus? See where I'm going with this? It ain't about something that you got to get over. The question is my relationship with God the core of whom I am? And one of the things we know from the book of Galatians is that Paul writes and says, those that are in Christ, there's no neither Jew or Gentile, so no ethnicity. There's no slave nor free, no lifestyle or status. He even says there's no male and female. Meaning, this doesn't mean those go away, but what it means is that the truest thing about you is that you are in Christ. And one of the most beautiful things in the world is to be in a relationship with, in a marriage, with another person who is in Christ. It is not my crutch to be married to my wife who loves the Lord as I do. It is not my crutch. It was not some awkward box I checked off of a list. It was the greatest gift that God ever gave me because the core of who she is and the core of who I am are the same. And that is the most fulfilling thing in the world. We have romance and we have attraction, but if our core identity is not the same, then there will always be something deeply missing from our relationship and it'll be very frustrating. Verse 9. I compare you, my love, to a mare among Pharaoh's chariots. Your cheeks are lovely with ornaments and your neck with a string of jewels. And then, after he says this to her, so he has brought her into the king's palace, brought her into his chambers, and then the other women speak. We will make for you ornaments of gold studded with silver. They don't mean for him, they mean for her. So she's walking in, she feels deeply insecure. She is not like these other girls. But then he brings her into that environment and immediately publicly praises her. And notice how the women's response, it moves based upon his response to her. That other people react to her the way that the person she's romantically linked to acts with her. That his character gives her character. And on the flip side of that, if he had a lack of character, it would be representative of her. And the law here is that our character will be tied to whom we are with. If you're asking the question, do I want to be with this person? Do I date this person? Do I want to be romantically linked to this person? Know that how you are viewed will forever be tied to them as long as you are in a relationship with. I know people and that I have personally been a part of. I have interviewed pastors to be at not has not yet happened here, but I have interviewed pastors to be at the church I worked at. And I met the man and he was awesome and I wanted him to pastor our students. And then I met his spouse and he did not get the job because of her character, because he was tied to her, because they were one together. A marriage relationship, two people become one. Know that your character will forever be tied to whom you are with as long as you are in the relationship and maybe even beyond. My wife and how awesome she is makes me look like a freaking genius. She is so much more likable than me. Seriously, she genuinely is. If you've met me and met her, you're like, yeah, this is like, I'm not even being facetious or like over complimentary. This is a true fact. She is 1,000 times more likable than me. There are things in my brain that do not work and I don't get why. Maybe I was dropped, but they work in her brain and she's amazing. And she makes me look great. The person you are with will either be your the jewel in your crown, or they will be the greatest thorn in your side. So choose wisely. And then finally, let's fast forward. We'll end with this. So now she is met. They are interested. He has brought her home to the people. And now they are going to just kind of just dote on one another a little bit, just speak into one another. But she's going to start with herself. So we're going to fast forward. Go to chapter 2, verse 1. She says, I am the rose of Sharon, the lily of the valleys. And he says, as a lily among brambles, that means thorns, so is my love among the young women. And then she says to the first half of verse 3, as an apple tree among the trees of the forest, so is my beloved among the young men. The key word here being rare. They are both rare people. That flower, the lily of the valley, it grows one time a year in one location in the entire planet. One location, one time a year. He says, you're like this rose among, sorry, other ladies, thorns. And he says, you are rare in this. And then she goes back to him and says, you're like an apple tree, which gives, the apple tree gives sustenance. It gave food among these other trees that did nothing. An apple tree was also, or how apples were used, they were also used as an aphrodisiac to awaken and increase sexual arousal. And so she's saying, you are not like these other guys. And he's saying, you are not like these other women. And one of the questions we have to ask is, how did they arrive at this point? Did they just magically find each other? Did God go, you're the one, and you're the one, and magically bring them together? Because I don't mean to burst your bubble, but the idea of the one, it doesn't exist. It's not real. It's not real. You know why I know it's not real? It is nowhere in Scripture. The idea that God has magically gone, this is the person you're going to be with for your entire life. Now, maybe part of his will is that he has done that for some people. I know people that he has done that for. But it is not a universal truth above for all. What is in the Bible is whenever you pick the one, you stay with the one no matter what happens. So when you pick the one, you stay with the one. That is what is in the Bible, not God has magically perfectly crafted a human being that perfectly fits with your half of the puzzle piece, and together you're one picture. Like, that does not exist. That is not real. What is real is that when I choose to be with that person, what type of person am I? And we ask these questions like, is he the one or is she the one? I promise at some point you will ask that question. But until you get to that question, the better question to ask, the question they were asking, which allowed them to find that rare person, was this question. Oh, let me go back. See, the better question to ask for our life is, am I becoming the one? Am I becoming the one? See, we act like we deserve a certain type of person. My man will do this for me and this for me and this for me and this for me. And we'll do, whenever I marry her, she had better have this and she had better have this and she had better have this. That is not a great way to look at other human beings. That is a terrible way to view the opposite sex in a person that one day you could be with. Because it asks the question, we said this last week, what about you is good enough for me? No one in here deserves the one. You don't deserve a rare catch. I don't either. Let me get that out of your brain. You do not deserve someone that will treat you in a romantic relationship with love, respect, and fulfill what God desires. You don't deserve that. What you deserve is to be treated with respect and worth as a valued human being made in the image of God. You deserve, and everybody deserves that. But when it comes to the person you're going to be with and enter into a romantic relationship with, you don't deserve that. It's a gift given to you. Because if you deserve it, then think of how you view that other person. Then why didn't you do this for me? And why didn't you do this for me? It becomes something that they owe you rather than a gift God has given you and me to steward and to care for and to serve that other person. So the better question to ask for your life no matter at what point you end up in a romantic relationship, is am I becoming the one? Am I becoming whom God has called me to be? It's not a guarantee that you'll find the one, but it is a guarantee that when you do, at least you'll be ready, as opposed to unprepared. Next week, as they travel in their relationship, now we're going to get into some of the more nitty-gritty questions. They enter into their relationship, the feelings are increasing, but so is the part where they want to be physical. And so next week, where we're going to go is we got to ask the question, how far is too far? When it comes to a romantic relationship, when it comes to anybody, how far physically is too far? Where can I go? Where's the line? What does God offer? Where are the boundaries? Let's pray.